big dog balls off. Maverick for Jordan Flegel. That was the sound of the door. Whoa. Yeah, that was the door opening. Yeah, that was pretty good, wasn't it? Michael Winslow stuff. Big dog balls off. Maverick for Jordan Flegel giving you the takes that make you quake. Here at the Dog Pound. Let me hear you, everybody out there. If you're not, growling, if you're not barking, you're not a real Dog Pound member. Yeah, we want to be able to hear you right now. But the big dogs are back here to recap NBA Finals, Game 3, and maybe even a little bit of a Game 4 preview. I'm recording this Friday morning right before Game 4, so we will be giving you guys all of our hottest takes. We've had a day to sit on the results of Game 3, and it was a doozy. Lots to talk about, lots to discuss, lots to break down. But Jordan, I got to say this, and I forgot, actually. This was going to be my lead-in earlier this week. Maybe it was Game 2, the preview. But so I watched this movie this past weekend, and I got to say, NBA players these days, they just are showing up. They're populating everywhere. They're just in the most random scenarios and situations. And I watched this movie. I don't know if you ever heard of this movie, Jordan. It's on Netflix. It's called Joyride. Have you heard of this?
No, I just know the new-ish Kesha song, "Joyride," which is
interesting.
which is a fun one. But no, I've not seen this movie.
So, long story short, it's like
you watch the weirdest shit, man. I feel like this is really going to be really obscure. Go on.
It's I don't know how to if you've ever seen like Euro Trip, that's the closest I could kind of compare it to. But it is like Asian women. And they are going, the one girl, like, they're all Chinese, and the one girl goes to, she has a business meeting in China, so she brings her, like, her two friends to help translate. She doesn't speak Chinese because she was adopted, or her Chinese friends do speak Chinese because they weren't, and then they all get into these crazy situations. Long story short, spoiler alert, skip ahead 30 seconds if you don't want to know how the Joyride movie ends. It turns out the girl is Korean the whole time, and she was never Chinese, which I thought was hilarious.
shame on you, man. Shame on you.
Yes, shame on me. But the part that I wanted to talk about,
that is kind of
funny. They say it really early on. The one girl's like, she lives in like her shed or something, and the one girl's like a successful lawyer. The other girl lives in her shed. She's pretty much like a starving artist kind of thing. The fucking girl who's living in the shed is like, yeah, I'm DMing Baron Davis right now. He plays basketball in China. He's a two-time NBA All-Star. And I'm like, that is a very specific guy to like pull out of a crowd. And I'm like, is he going to be in this fucking movie?
Oh, no.
Sure as hell. We fucking get to a part where they're stranded. And she's like, oh, I got my boyfriend to come pick us up. Or my Baron Davis is coming. They bring the tour bus. And dude, no, it was. And he's in the movie. And he like... is doing like he like bangs the one girl.
Oh, okay.
And like he's got lines. Like, he was all right in it. Like she's like, yeah, I just love like the noises in sex. He's like, yeah, me too. And then they start just doing like sex noises just in front of me. I was like, Baron, you don't gotta do this, do you, man?
Oh man,
it was interesting. Crazy movie.
I gotta watch this movie now. I think I know the movie you're talking about. I feel like I'm remembering. It's not that old, right? Like a couple years ago.
No, 2023. I think I just looked it up because I couldn't remember the name of it. So I had to look that up. But yeah, very interesting movie. Some scenes were a little weird. Some scenes were really funny. I give it a solid 7 out of 10.
Okay.
But yeah, Baron Davis, your acting performance. I believe your acting debut. I'll give it a 6 out of 10 if I'm being critical, maybe even a 5 out of 10. But if we're comparing it to like athletes,
his acting.
If we're and if we're comparing it like athletes in movies, I'd probably bump it up to like a 7.5 because you were fine.
Okay,
wasn't like you were in it and it was like a glaring like you really messed up.
Love it. Okay, yeah. Well, hey, I had no idea. I'm looking it up now. I remember seeing the ads for this movie couple years ago or whatever. It looks good. I'm gonna watch. It's got 90% on Rotten Tomatoes, Matt. So people really like it. But Baron Davis, I had no idea that was gonna be a little throw in. I don't know the last time I thought about Baron Davis. I mean, probably more than the average person. I do think about Baron Davis. You know, a few times a year at least. It's kind of like the how often us men think about the Roman Empire type thing. But seeing him on the big screen. Yeah, I'm going to have to throw this on very soon.
There we go. Well, something we did throw on our big screens, Jordan, or little screens, or you know, tablets, whatever medium-sized screens you guys are rocking these days, was the NBA Finals Game 3, and the Pacers pull off the upset at home, pulling ahead 2-1 in the NBA Finals best of seven series. It was another back and forth. Like, this was, I would say, by far the most entertaining game of the finals so far. Oh, yeah. Obviously game one had the crazy finish, but this was super competitive, throughout the entire game, a lot of runs on each side. And once again, you know, the Pacers, things were, you know, early on looking like, oh, maybe the Thunder have kind of figured them out, but, nope, they just kept fighting. And by that fourth quarter, like that was ball game. Like the Pacers were just clicking. They were outworking the Thunder once again, like something that we, you know, talked about in game one, something we talked about even in game two, that the Pacers can just outwork their opponent into, you know, winning games. And again, we talked about the strength and numbers on this team. This is really where, you know, that bench depth for the Pacers is, you know, just, you know, the Thunder are a deep team, but it wasn't even comparable, the bench output in this one. Only 18 points total off the bench for the Thunder in game three. And the Pacers, you know, you get 27 points off the bench from fucking Ben Mathurin, the most off a bench scoring performance since Jason Terry in 2011. It's just, it's mind-boggling. You know, shout out to the Canadian, Ben Mathurin. Also one of the youngest players to ever score 25 or more in a NBA Finals series as well. I believe the most off the bench, he was the first off the bench 25 or younger player since 1970. So yeah, like crazy. It just felt like everything was going down for the kid. Yep. And then you combine that with, you know, TJ McConnell, who was, you know, amazing off the bench on both sides of the ball. You had those inbound steals. The one was just horrible on Caruso, just throwing it right in his mitts. But this was, you get 37 points combined just between Mathurin and McConnell, you know, more than double the bench output of the Thunder. And, you know, you're probably going to win that ball game as long as your starters are kind of holding their end of the bargain.
Yeah, 100%. And like the bench scoring, I think, is the biggest thing. But, you know, just in general, I think Indiana flipped the script. I was kind of on them for not playing good enough defense in game two. They played way better defense in game three.
Their defense was amazing.
Like they did what OKC normally does to teams, which is force more turnovers than they commit. They had 11 blocks to 4 for OKC and 13 steals to 6 for OKC. Like that's OKC's whole identity, is getting those type of stats, forcing more turnovers than they commit themselves, and racking up those defensive stats too, because that indicates that they're the ones who have gotten out and ran and gotten easy buckets. And like that was all Indiana in game three, and the Thunder just didn't play with that required sort of energy. And I think they looked like a young team going out playing on the road for the first time that just couldn't summon enough. And when they're not doing that, they're not talented enough offensively outside of SGA, who himself didn't have a great game. His first not great game of these finals, I would say. And, you know, game one, you can nitpick, but he scored 38 or whatever he had in game one. Because outside of that, I mean, Jalen Williams, he was all right. I think this is probably his best game, at least scoring wise. But agreed. He also, like, he was a minus -9 in this one. Like, I don't think it was that for a guy who had 26-6. I don't think he had that strong. Like, his performance doesn't really stand out to me. He had a few turnovers at kind of costly times, like 4 of them in the game, and that one in the fourth where he just threw it away to no one. Like, you can sort of say the same thing about Chet. I think Chet overall had a solid game. I think he was kind of the Thunder that I was most impressed with, but most of his work came earlier in the game down the stretch.
I was going to say he had like 12 points in the halfway through the second quarter.
Yeah, exactly. So he looked strong, but then he just sort of fades over time. And by the end, he's just not that much of a factor. I think the minutes load are telling in this one too, because you look at, you know, Indiana, both of these teams like to play their deep bench as much as possible if they can, because they want to keep guys fresh. And, you know, both these teams like to run and filter guys in and out. Indiana was still able to play, you know, their starters, and then 28 minutes for Toppin, 22 for Mathurin, 18 for Ben Shepherd, who played even more than TJ McConnell, who, you know, like you said, he had maybe the game of his life. He only had 15 minutes and, you know, did all that work in that time. Whereas the Thunder, you know, they're leaning on pretty much everyone now in their starting lineup. Cason Wallace is kind of their quasi starter. You know, Caruso, a lot of nights, you know, is probably, that you could say, on average the better player than him, but they like bringing him off the bench, and, you know, that makes sense to me. But, you know, beyond that, you know, you have Caruso coming in for 32 minutes, and then Hartenstein, who played 18, and again, he wasn't that much of a factor, you know, in this game, which was a bit surprising to me. Like, he looked like we were talking about after game one, he looked ready to contribute and played really well on both sides of the ball, and I thought he could be a situation where he should be playing more minutes than Chet, but you know, he just did not have a good game in this one. I'll expect him to sort of bounce back and be better in game four here, but yeah, you just didn't have enough guys, and you know, the script was flipped also, in the sense that your role players showed up at home. They had that great game two bounce back for OKC, where you had Wiggins and you had, you know, even Joe, I think, hit a few shots, and you had Caruso off the bench as well, like performing well in front of the home crowd. And like I said, when we talked about game three going into it, like, you know, hopefully Indiana can get that energy off of their bench, and hopefully you can expect OKC's guys, just to their role players, not quite to look as good. And that's exactly what happened. And I think I said, oh, it'd be great to have a McConnell game or a Mathurin game, or get, Obi Toppin playing well in a game as well. Cause, you know, obviously he played really well in that game one, kind of pushed them over the top. I didn't think it would all happen in one game. That's yes. Great for the, like, McConnell, you know, obviously didn't go out there and score 20 points, but to have his 10, 5 assists and 5 fucking steals, that's like the most McConnell thing ever. And a plus 12 in the game. Mathurin, we obviously know how you know, we just talked about how good he was. Like, the fact that he goes 9 for 12, like, that efficiency is just amazing. And I thought he played really solid defense all night too. And then you look at Obi Toppin, like, his stats don't jump out at you. His counting stats, 8 and 6, he was plus 18, by far the highest on the whole team. Like, he was just playing.
And his defense was sensational.
Yeah, so like, he's now solidly a guy, I think, that, you know, Rick Carlisle knows he can rely on him coming off of that bench, whether he's scoring or not. And that's a huge boost, because I wasn't sure that, you know, he would be on that level and that type of finals you know, contributor. But I think he's solidly shown that he's ready to do that. And so, yeah, it's just, this is like a really good, like, aside from everything else, like, we're talking about, I hear people talking about the fucking ratings, and these are two small market teams, and, you know, all this bullshit,
yeah, we'll get into that,
you know, and the fact that most people picked OKC in 5 in this series, and officially already all those people who picked that are wrong, which, you know, feels fun. And like, all this bullshit.
I think I went 6. You went 6. I was pretty close to going 5, though.
Yeah, you. I know. Me too. I'm not blaming those people, but I, you know, I just like that this is going longer than we sort of expected it would.
100%.
But like, if you block out all that bullshit and sort of these preconceived notions that I think people had about these finals, like, this has been an amazing finals through three 100%. Games for the basketball. If you're just talking about the basketball itself, like. Because I fully expect OKC, they have the ability to win here tonight. You know, it might be another close game, but like, and Indiana could go up 3-1, which might even, you could argue, that makes it even more interesting, because then we're going back to OKC. So like, I after watching this game three, like, yeah, takeaway number one is the Pacers now, the Indiana fucking Pacers in 2025 are 2 wins away from the NBA title, which is still, I can't believe that, but. Just overall, we're just watching great basketball by 2 really deep teams who play the right way and share the ball. And, you know, there's no, obviously SGA is the MVP. He's clearly the best player on the Thunder, but, you know, they kind of share the sugar and, you know, are dominant defensively. And on the Pacer side, yeah, you don't really have like a traditional superstar. They just move the ball around and, you know, whoever's hot that day is going to get fed the ball. And that's kind of what makes them, I think. You know, we're talking about like strengths and weaknesses that the Pacers have. It is true. Like, we talked recently about how this whole, you're never going to know who's going to, you know, necessarily score it on any given night and how much, and you're not going, you're not running this heliocentric basketball with Halliburton like a lot of the other guards, you know, lead guards in the NBA were doing that through. And it's like, okay, yeah, that can be good, especially if you're talking in a regular season context, but you kind of need that top dog in the playoffs. Maybe they're sort of changing my mind a little bit about that, or at least if you have the personnel to do it, this is actually harder to game plan against. Because if you're the Thunder, you're like, okay, we're locking down Halliburton sort of as much as humanly possible here, but we can't plug every hole all at once. And the Pacers and Rick Carlisle, yeah, like, look at this amazing defense, especially in this context. We can't let them know what we're thinking or where this is going to come from. We're just going to have to play within the flow see where we can attack weaknesses. And that's how you get, a Ben Mathurin game. Like, I feel like other coaches or other teams in their setup, like, Ben Mathurin wouldn't even get the 22 minutes he played, in game three to score those 27 points because, like imagine Tibbs. Like, Tibbs wouldn't play, he'd probably play six guys. It's like Indiana, like, they're at times can kind of be up and down. This sort of democratic way of playing basketball can make them look not quite like your classic contending team. But, like, I feel like they're... We got to accept, you know, all of us that, like, they're doing something right. They know what they're doing. They've now just went further than any of us expected. And it's in this sort of way that teams normally don't do it these days. And it's really refreshing. Mm-hmm. So I just got to tip my cap to both of these teams, how they've played through these first three games. Cause it's been entertaining as hell.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not compared to too much. I mean, 2024 finals sucked. Yep. 2023 finals sucked. Yep. So this is the most competitive one since 2022 Boston and Golden State. Yep. Like, and that was a decent series, but I would say that this has been a more entertaining, series to watch than that one. And that was even with my boy Wiggins lighting it up when he got snubbed for the finals MVP. Yes. I want to get into the ratings and all that discourse around that ridiculousness. Before we get into that, I do want to, you were talking about a couple points there. When you're talking about the Pacers again, like, they really, like you said, flip the script on the Thunder in this one, because the Thunder, they're looked at as this, like, defensive, you know, juggernaut, which is they are. Yep. But in this one, you could have told me that the Pacers were the one of the best defenses of all time, the way that they play. And again, this is where having an actual coach that understands how to make adjustments in basketball works, which is, you'd think a fucking given in the NBA, at the NBA level, that you'd have a coach that understands the game enough to make these changes and figure out, little strategies and game plans. But apparently it's lost on several coaches out there in the NBA. A really basic one that I noticed throughout this game, and the broadcast talked about it a little bit. And this is something that, like, fucking coaches do in high school. You take two solid defenders that match up well with star player, and you just rotate them. Yep. So that they're always fresh, and their star player is always getting attacked by a guy who has a little bit more energy than them.
Shout out Kieran Dixon, baby.
Yeah, and that's what they did to SGA. They had Nembhard and Ben Shepherd, who, again, admittedly, like, they're not the lockdown defenders. Yep. that they have compared to some of these other guys on the Pacers team. But they hustle, they're aggressive, and they're not afraid to get all up in SGA's jersey. And that worked. Like, it really did, I think, disturb him and kind of throw him off, because, SGA down the stretch, I think, did look a little bit tired, and I think he was getting frustrated. Yep. Because every time that he kind of started getting going, figuring out one defender, now he's got to change it up, because now he's got a totally different, assignment, different matchup guarding him, and he's got to kind of switch up his style a little bit. So that is just a sort of small little defensive, game plan that you can make in a series like this that can really, give you a slight edge. Like, yeah, if SGA just goes and lights both of them up, yeah, it doesn't really matter. But if it works and you can find guys who, can actually do it, like, sometimes it doesn't make sense to just say, hey, that's their best offensive player, I'm going to plug my best defensive player on them, and then we're just going to see what happens. Like, yeah, you can do that. But in a situation like this, I think that it was an awesome idea to, decide, hey, maybe I should, try something different. Another guy I want to shout out, had a pretty rough offensive game. But Miles Turner down the stretch was insane. He was defensively.
He felt like he was bad all game, and then had a just monster like final 3 minutes or whatever. He made so many plays.
Yeah, 5 blocks and a steal in this one. Awesome. And that, yeah, down the stretch with like a minute left, had that huge swat, and then they get the ball back. I keep trying to remember who it was that he pinned there, and then had the kind of like weird stifling strip, not really a block, not really a steal. I believe that was when Nembhard ended up getting the rock. Over Chet. And that was also hilarious to see like a 6'4", 6'3" Nembhard box out Chet, who's 7'1". Yes. They probably weighed the same.
Yep.
I was super impressed with the defensive skill set of all three of those guys. Very different styles, with Turner being kind of known as a really good rim protecting big mobile guy. But Nembhard and Ben Shepherd, getting their stamp on this game. And the only other thing I wanted to mention for the side of the Pacers was, like, with these strength in numbers, and it's funny because, again, they've both kind of shifted their game plans, but I feel like the Thunder are almost in panic mode with the way that they decided to do things in this game. And I know you talked about it a little bit there, talking about their minutes. Like, SGA playing 42 minutes is very unusual.
Yep.
And that, to me, tells me that Dagnall doesn't really trust his bench, which I think is the wrong way to go, because playing their bench and relying on these deep rotations is what got them here. It's what won them 68 games.
Yep.
And now all of a sudden he's like, nope, can't risk it. That is the wrong move to make, because again, you look at the Pacers, Rick Carlisle is running the exact same rotations. He's running the exact same player minutes that he's been doing all year.
Yep.
That is going to work. Everybody is in the same contingency. They all are, everything's staying consistent throughout their lineup and throughout their game plan. If you're switching this up and now your team is down 2-1 in the finals, that should be an indicator that maybe you should go back to what brought you there.
Yep.
Get some more minutes. Like, I know you were talking about Hartenstein here. Like, yeah, 4-3 and 18 minutes is pretty underwhelming, but still decent enough minutes that I think he warrants him getting a couple more.
You got to keep playing him. He's just had a bad game, but yeah.
Well, and then you look at a guy like Aaron Wiggins, like, only gets 9 minutes in this game after he had 18 off the bench in game 2.
Yep.
A huge reason for you even winning that game. So it is odd to me, like, some of these decisions. Like, Isaiah Joe only played 4 minutes, but he was 2-for-2, and both the shots he made were nice threes. He was moving well without the ball, playing solid defense, I thought, in that very brief minutes that he got. It's just it's weird to me that you essentially have a 7-player lineup in this series when you've been running 9-10 for most of the year.
Yep.
So I think maybe they want to revert back because I think that down the stretch, like, these young guys, even though they should have unlimited gas tanks, I think they did get a little fatigued down there. And then on the other side of it, it was crazy. Tyrese Haliburton, I swear to God, didn't play till, like, I don't think he checked in till like eight or seven minutes left in the fourth quarter. And he was resting for like the last couple minutes of the third quarter. Like, that's crazy that your like top dog can take that time off. Like, 36 minutes is, a good chunk of time, but in the NBA finals for a star point guard, like, that is not really anything.
Yep.
And then even crazier, Siakam, I believe, started the quarter, and then they had him rest. Like, they took him out around like the 10-minute mark, and they put him back in with like 5 minutes left. He only played 31 minutes.
Yep, I know.
Like, that's almost unheard of, that your second best player in an NBA Finals game that was close down the stretch, and you're letting him sit, and you're letting him rest, and you're getting his body, ready to go so he can just explode for those last 5 minutes.
Yep.
And again, it worked. You put those guys in there, they only have to put in the work for that last couple minutes, and then the fucking Thunder have been out there. They're fucking, like, just dragging their bones across the court.
Yep.
It was similar to what I was saying about Nembhard and Ben Shepherd, risk rotating. They were the fresher team because they made the better coaching adjustments.
Yep.
If you're the Thunder, you can't just, unless you're blowing them out, you can't just rely on your, top 6 guys for an entire game if, they're never going to have the fresher legs on the court. So,
yeah.
I think that's my biggest takeaway. And, if we're talking outlook for game 4, Thunder, you just got to go and get some help from your friends. You got to trust the bench. You got to trust the rest of your unit. Because I I mean, I don't think any of us ever saw this series ever going, you know, with the Pacers up.
No.
Maybe a game one upset is pretty much the only, you know, realm that we could have seen this. I definitely wouldn't have expected a 2-1 deficit coming into game three. But yeah, they smell blood in the water. They know that they have the ability to beat this team. And I think that if you try to stray away from your identity any more than you already have in the series, that the Pacers could run away with this.
Yeah, I think right from the beginning, the coaching advantage has been with Indiana, with Rick Carlisle. Like,
yep.
And Mark Dagnall is a great coach, but you know, Rick Carlisle has been doing this a lot longer in a head coaching capacity. Literally, you know, won that chip in 2011.
Been here and done that.
Yeah. And as an underdog then too, and you know, it's sort of, you know, you talk about Ben Mathurin being the most points off the bench in a finals since Jason Terry in 2011, also a Rick Carlisle coach team. So maybe he just, you know, sort of knows how to get that out of his bench guys, but back then he was doing some weird shit. Like he was defending LeBron with JJ Barea. He was like,
Jason guarding LeBron, and
Jason Terry, like all that stuff. Like there was some really, you know, and Dwayne Casey was there on
JJ
that staff.
Barea's doing these days.
Me too. I fucking love that guy. But yeah, Dwayne Casey was his defensive
guy. Maybe TJ McConnell before TJ McConnell.
Honestly, he's, but my God, what was he? 5'5"?
He felt like he was like 5'5". It's probably like 6'1", but yeah, he was a tiny little irritant.
Yeah, and a big part of that too, like they played zone in that finals a lot of the time. That was Dwayne Casey's defensive scheme when he was the assistant there, what got him hired in Toronto eventually. And so like Rick Carlisle's always been open to doing just sort of whatever is needed. He's not really a cookie cutter type of coach like other guys who have certain styles. Like you look at a Tibbs or a Budenholzer or like some of these other coaches who
Doc Rivers
who are kind of stuck in their ways. He's really open to just, doing whatever needs to be done in any given series in a given game. And right from the beginning, when going into it, Dagnall changes his two big starting lineup. It's kind of like, oh, we've already, at least we can think of it as we've already got them on the back foot a little bit. They've already made an adjustment before we've even played the game. You know, if we can, sort of win in that way, like even though they've adjusted to us already, if we can look like we can compete, you know, with that prior adjustment, how are they going to feel about that? Are they going to go back to that two big lineup? Like clearly they haven't in these last two games. And obviously they bounce back in game two and they could come out here and OKC could dominate game four tonight. We'll see. I give them, you know, a decent chance to do that, but it just kind of feels like so far the coaching edge and just the coaching, I don't know, the confidence that Rick Carlisle has got to be a lot higher than Dagnall, who's got to be sweating a little bit right now, thinking like, a few of the things I've tried really have not worked. And my guy, Cason Wallace, you won't find a bigger Cason Wallace fan than me, but he's looked a little bit more like Carson Wallace, like he was in the whatever that was at All-Star Weekend when they fucked up his name.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of shooting the ball, like you need offense. I think the thing with OKC is like they've got a bunch of guys who are dogs defensively. We know that, but especially when you're looking like at you know people contributing off the bench, we don't just need all a whole bunch of you know defenders because you have Caruso coming off the bench in this case. Hartenstein, you know, he plays both sides of the ball, but you know solidly he's a good defender. He's not going to go out and get you 15 points every game. So you need that offensive contribution from Wiggins and Joe. And like you pointed out, the fact that they play 14 minutes between them, like I don't think you can do that when Cason Wallace, you've got him in the starting lineup. He hasn't hit a single 3-point shot this entire playoff or this entire final series.
Yeah.
You know, he's not taking that many to be fair to him, but like you need offensive threats alongside SGA. It's felt through these three games that it's so heavily weighted to SGA doing so much of the heavy lifting offensively because Jalen Williams and Chet, even though, you know, they've had good games and good moments, you know, so far in this series, you can't count on them consistently. So you need that little offensive boost from, you know, Wiggins and Joe. Those are their shooters off the bench that, like you said, they've relied on all year. They can't turn away from them now and just expect that, that they can just lean on their like five incredible defensive players when all of those guys can look a little bit shaky on the offensive end. Like again, like Lou Dort he goes, he's been just a flamethrower from three for, you know, most of the yeah. the time he plays
the rainbow arc.
Yeah, he was 4 for 5 from three, but still only 12 points total. And it's like we do need to, you know, especially if the Pacers, who have this high powered offense, if they're going to be scoring like 110 every night or more, if we can't hold them to less than that, we're going to have to find the offense ourselves if we want to win this series. And yeah, it can't just be on SGA, and it can't even just be on SGA and Jalen Williams like it was in this game. Like someone else needed to get in some sort of rhythm and some sort of flow. And it's always in these final series where you're looking at the other guys, the role players. It's like, who's playing better? Again, it is heavily weighted to, you know, whichever team's playing at home. Normally those role players step up, but you're just going to need to lean on your guys who you know can provide you with some shooting. You can't go all defense in a game where the other team was way better than you at defense. Like it's just a failure of sort of the philosophy of how you want to play. And I'm wondering, like, considering Cason Wallace, like if he's not going to be that much of a factor offensively, and you're not short of defensive talent, do you really, like, would you make an adjustment if you're Dagnall to actually go back to starting your double bigs? Like, do you have too much pride to be like, oh no, I've made the adjustment, I can't go back on that now. But like, if that's what's stopping him from doing it even a little bit, I think that's a huge mistake, because throw your fucking ego out the window. This is the finals. Like this is like, you know, we talk about how the Thunder window is going to be open for fucking 10 years, but we've heard that before. We heard that with the Celtics last year, and look, they're sitting at home right now. You never know what could happen. This might be your best and potentially only chance to win a championship. If you think it can help, just going back, falling back into the rhythm and the starting lineup that you had all playoffs and most of the regular season, like, fucking do it. If there's any sort of like, oh no, we can't show weakness. I think it's actually weaker to think that way. Like, just do whatever you need to do, or whatever you think you need to do. Try another thing. And yeah, I think Dagnall, you know, from the outside, feels like he's on the back foot and has been a little bit tentative in terms of, you know, what he can do in terms of adjustments. And yeah, Carlisle's looked very free and loose and not worried or anxious to try anything. And that gamble's kind of paid off here for through the first couple games. But like, you know, thinking about tonight, like I think OKC's favored yet again.
Six points again. I think they were, it was something crazy. Like they were like 10 point favorites.
I know, I saw that. I'm like,
game three.
I mean, it could have gone that way. And again, we were all kind of thinking about it, but yeah, I just think the Pacers continually are just, underrated, underappreciated.
Covering machines.
And like, it's a similar situation though. Like when you look back, it was 2-1 after three in the Knicks series against the Pacers. And I would have, you know, I think when we talked about it, I didn't, I was on vacay in my mind. I was like, the Knicks are going to win this, even it up 2-2. Because obviously I picked the Knicks to win that fucking series, you know, overall. And like Indiana came out, that was when Tyrese Halliburton had that incredible, like, 32-10 or whatever with no turnovers game he had to put the team up 3-1, stranglehold in the series. And it's like, okay, see, they cannot take anything for granted here. They cannot fuck around. They do not want to go down 3-1. Like, they can't. This is I feel like, you know, everyone's like, oh yeah, okay, see, they can even it up. You know, this has been a close series so far. It's gone literally back and forth each game. OKC absolutely has to treat this as a must win. They're not coming back from 3-1. Like you need a special situation to come back from 3-1 in the finals. Literally the only time it happened was, you know, the LeBron Draymond groin kick, everything. Like, it's just not happening. You know, obviously the Thunder will, you know, the people will give them as good a chance as almost any finals team in this situation, considering who they are and they're going back home. And sure, it would be possible, but you've got to even this thing up. So you've got to get back to who you are of forcing those turnovers, you know, locking guys down defensively, but you just need that extra offensive help. And the last thing I noticed from the OKC side is you talked about SGA down the stretch of this one, missed a lot of shots, sort of uncharacteristically, But it also
even missed a free throw.
Even missed a big free throw there. But it also looked like he just didn't have that extra energy. So like, you know, going down the stretch, like you said, he played 42 minutes. He's not used to doing that, typically. And he did look tired. But also, I'm kind of, in my mind, I'm thinking of it as potentially the dark side of this, like, never get too high, never get too low, I'm always consistent. SGA, the way he plays, and I've admired this about him, it almost looks like he's not even breaking a sweat. Like, he just goes, does what he needs to do, is super methodical, almost moves like a mix between, like, you know, Kawhi, because it's so, like, almost robotic sometimes, but he's got this smoothness of Kobe, and he just never... There's no emotion on his face. Like, if he makes like a big bucket, which OKC hasn't really been in that situation that much this year to even do, like, they've just smoked people all year. Like, he's not really been in that adverse situation where he's got to come down or come back from a big lead. Like, I've never seen him go back down, you know, as he's starting to play defense and like scream at his bench or like scream at the camera or like anything like that. And I think at this point, OKC actually needs that from him and from everybody else. This whole, like, we're mature, we're a young team who's super mature and buttoned up, we're not going to react to anything. I think that can be a detriment if you need to get fired up about something and you need to actually summon something deeper than just what the, you know, the face level game, you know, what you can do on the court. Like, this is the finals. You're going to have to find something that you don't normally tap into. And I think OKC, and unless they're willing to do that, they might just continually be outworked, out-hustled by the Pacers, who clearly in that game three looked like they wanted it more. So I think they're going to have to – it's not their MO. It's not what they've done all year. It's actually been the opposite. But OKC and SGA is the one who's going to need to start this, I think. They're going to need to start showing some emotion and that they really want this because, you know, we obviously know that they do, and they've worked hard for it all year. They deserve it as a 68-win team, but – this whole, I'm just going to go through the motions here. We're going to methodically beat you. The Pacers are too good for that. You're going to have to, to get a little bit dirty here.
Well, and it's funny you say that too, because I actually, this is like the one time ever that I enjoyed the whole mic'd up thing with a player, because he was just, let's go guys. Come on, guys. Okay, yeah, I got it. Hey, man, I'm mic'd up. Yeah. But it actually caught me off guard. Like, I started a little bit because, yeah, it is weird that, yeah, like you said, like, SGA, on the court, very conservative, and he's chilling. When he was, like, they had a clip of when he was on the bench and he was talking to some guys or between timeouts and stuff, and he's like, yeah, like, wow, we gotta fucking want this. We gotta do it. I'm like, where's that energy on the court?
Yeah, you gotta show like, it to everyone, the fans, us on TV. Like, it's gotta be outward, I think.
Like, I know it's kind of a stupid thing to say because it is just basketball, but you gotta, in sports, sometimes you gotta go into it like you're going to war. Yes, like, gotta lead your men. You gotta get them fucking fired up. Yes. And on the other side of it, if they see like your top player, they're like, again, look at the guy like a Kevin Garnett out there that was like growling and like salivating and foaming at the mouth, like smacking the floor. You need a guy like that because then the other team is, they're thinking about it, whether they're intimidated or not. They're at least just like, it's in their head. They're like, oh fuck. Like, yeah, he wants it. He's fired up.
Think about the
whether
other way.
It's funny or not.
Well, like when Halliburton I forget which, cause he's hit fucking big shot. Oh, it was in the Cavs series. I think he did the big testicle dance after he hit it.
Yes.
He does the choke sign. When he wins it against New York, that like psychologically gets into the head of your opponent. It's like, this guy, not only is he going to fucking, they're going to come back from 20 points, even if we're up by that, you know, with like 2 minutes left, he's going to hit a big shot and then embarrass me, by doing some crazy dance. And it's like, yeah, maybe that stuff is superfluous and doesn't really matter technically, but like, 100%. I agree. It gets in the other guy's heads, and OKC just doesn't really play those mind games. They like to beat you in an ethical sort of traditional way, but might be time to dig into your mind game bag a little bit.
Well, the last thing I'll say here, Jordan, is we kind of talk about Game 3 and the series as a whole. And it's been a weird – I can't believe this is like a discourse, and I didn't even really want to talk about it in the first two games because it's been going on since the series started. But let's talk about the ratings and the whole quote-unquote, you know, is it good for the league, whatever. I'm going to say this right now, and I don't really understand how any actual basketball or sports fan can say it. If you are watching the game and you're enjoying the basketball, who the fuck cares who else is watching? Like, what does it matter? All the sponsorships are there. All the money is already being printed. All the money's been made. What do you give a shit if Adam Silver rakes in $10 billion or $9.5 billion, you know, for the year? Who cares? It doesn't matter. And, like, yeah, it's two smaller market teams, and if that turns off the casual, you know, viewer or whatever, who gives a fuck? Do you really care if, you know, Joe Schmo from accounting comes up to you in the morning and is like, oh, hey, I watched that basketball game last night, and then gives you the most, like,
thanks, Joe, like, Schmo.
Face, yeah, the most face level fucking take that you have to, like, grit your teeth and just be like, yes, yes, I do think SGA sucks. Yeah, yes, you're right. Yes. Yeah, like, it's the most stupid shit. Like, that's like my, like, the bane of my existence is when people, like, come in there and they watch one fucking finals game and then want to talk to you about it. Like,
but remember when the Raptors were in the finals, all the people who,
yes.
try to jump on the bandwagon. I'm like, I appreciate your support, but please never speak to me again.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. So it's like, why? I don't know why people want that to be a thing. Like, if you're not watching the whole year, like, who cares? It doesn't matter. The people who are watching this finals are probably people who are, you know, either big OKC fans, Pacers fans, or just love hoops. They just want to watch. They just want to see the two best teams play, make history, see who's going to lift the Larry O'Brien. That's all that matters. Yep. Why does it matter who's in? It really shouldn't. And I think I mentioned in the one of the last podcasts, I think that maybe some of it also is, like, you know, people aren't ready for the post LeBron era, post Steph Curry, post Kevin Durant, you know, these big names that everyone's gotten used to. And so they assume that, oh, well, no one that I have ever heard of is in this. Who the hell is Tyrese Halliburton? Yeah. Who's SGA? Like, it's just a changing of the guard. And I don't think people have accepted it yet. And I think that's part of the hesitancy and all that. It's funny to me, though. Then they had Adam Silver on there for some retcon on ESPN, and they were asking about all this stuff. And he's like, well, actually, 20 years ago, we were still competing for the most viewership. And it's like, yeah. Okay, well, Adam, there's no such thing as fucking live TV anymore. It's pretty much just sports in the news. So, yeah, you don't have fucking competition, you stupid oaf. It's just weird to me that that's, like, the whole, you know, idea is, oh, yeah, it's compared to when live TV was actually a thing.
Yeah.
And then the other side of it, not to get too much on a tangent, but then he's talking about the decals. Oh, the stickers on the floor are actually very slippery, so we had to get rid
of them.
For fuck's sake, a completely purple fucking court and a giant trophy throughout the entire middle for my stupid ass in-season tournament. That is 100% cool and not doable. Slippery or a distraction. But yeah, putting one fucking little sticker on the sideline. That would ruin the league. My long-winded way of saying, if you care about the ratings, you're a nerd. Just don't even watch. I don't care. If you want to actually see the two best basketball teams in the world go head to head, then great. If you just want to, you know, tune in to see some random, you know, stupidity, go watch DeMarcus Cousins in his Taiwanese league or whatever, rubbing his ball sweat on guys and getting into fights with the crowd.
That was funny as hell. He's I think it was in Puerto Rico. And yeah,
that's where he is. They suspend him for
the whole rest of the year or something. I think so.
They were dumping beers on him, and he's fucking, like, getting tackled by everybody. It was fucking crazy. Evan Fournier did, like, the jerking off.
Oh yeah,
and spraying it, throwing it into the crowd thing in his EuroLeague one, and I think it's in Greece. It might be the Greece league, and they were all fucking going nuts, and the crowd was, like, running onto the court, and they were trying to fight them and stuff. It was crazy.
We do need to experience, like, a EuroLeague game or something where they light 100%. Off the flares, where the whole building shakes because everyone, like, it's looks incredible. Been wanting to do that for years, but it's the you talk about ratings, like, first of all, ratings aren't a good way of measuring how much people like the game or the NBA. They're an old metric that really doesn't make sense anymore that people still talk about because it's most of these fucking people who work for these big media companies where it matters to them. Yeah. But yeah, it doesn't really matter to you or to me. The game is more global than it's ever been. There's more global fans than they've ever had. And there's...
Can we get the streamies numbers put in those?
Exactly. Throw those in there. The fact that, like... You got? Did you hear the fucking Korean call of Tyrese's game one winner? Like, play-by-play. Like, the fact that we can see all that, and clearly there's, like, audiences all over the world watching these games. Like, that I don't know if that folds into the quote unquote traditional ratings. Like, I feel like that it's not a good way to measure the health and popularity of the game. And the more and the more we talk about it, we just feel like we're insecure or whatever. And it's always also measuring it up against football. And football, you just it's its own separate thing. Like, you're never going to reach it on that level culturally. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about how people mainly in America think about the NBA. But we're again, the NFL doesn't necessarily have that sort of global reach in all these other places that basketball does. And so lean into mm-hmm. that and just accept that that's where you can make your inroads and come at it from a sense of pride, not this sense of insecurity that it seems like, people always sort of talk about the NBA in that way. And it always goes towards like, and the reason the ratings aren't as good is because of a situation like this, where, like you said, there's no big names that casual people will know. I wouldn't be surprised if there's casual fans who literally have no idea who anyone on either of these teams is. And it's like, okay, you can make that argument. Some of the finals that had the most hype around them in terms of names, like, do we really want to go back to the final Warriors-Cavs NBA finals that was a sweep that probably had the most name recognition ever, but it was literally 4-0 for Golden State? It's like, I don't want to watch that. And are we really going to care more and freak out when the casual fan isn't being taken care of, when the actual NBA fans are like, this is terrible. This was a completely non-competitive, final series. We hate this, versus this situation where it's like, this is great. This is some of the best basketball we've seen in the finals in quite a while. This is ethical, for anyone who wants to complain about that. Like, this is just great. And it's like, maybe we can actually have a series that goes long, and we can actually create some new NBA fans who are casual, who maybe they didn't tune in at the beginning, but now they're like, oh shit, it's game six here. Let me see what this is all about, and watch a game that's actually fast and exciting and going back and forth. And so, like, this worrying about the ratings, I just think it's a bit of a crazy conversation. Obviously, you can mention it, you can use it to sort of examine what's going on, sure, but I think that's obvious. I didn't need someone to tell me that the ratings would be down for an OKC Indiana finals. Like, thank you. I could have predicted that going into it. It's just a bunch of noise. But my pet peeve, similar to yours, is like Joe Schmo coming up giving you a basketball take. There's fucking people all my life, since I started getting into the NBA and just basketball in general, from a fucking kid up until now, who are like, oh, the NBA? That's not even real basketball. I only watch college. The NBA, they travel all the time. Mm-hmm. It's not real basketball. This finals is the closest to whatever the fuck those people are talking about that I've maybe ever seen. Like, this whole – people complain about too many threes. These teams – aren't taking that many threes in these finals games. It's closer to like 5-10 years ago, before the whole 3-point explosion. There's defenses being played. I think the officiating has been pretty good. Like, there's nothing I can complain about there. You've got not one sort of dominant player that's again, like we've been talking about this whole time. There's these teams that are very kind of old school in the way they operate. So even for those people, it's like we should be pleasing that crowd a little bit more. The I hate the NBA because it's not real basketball crowd, and it's like, it feels like in some circumstances, but it's true to life. It's like you can't please everyone all the time. You can't win mm-hmm. Out flatly in any situation. So let's just take the positives here. And if the one negative is these are a couple small market teams and some casuals aren't going to tune in, and that's going to take a hit to the ratings. I do not give a fuck.
Yeah, exactly. Well, ratings aside, Jordan, game four, let's lay down our official predictions.
Yep.
Who you got, Pacers or Thunder? How are we going here? Because I'm still pretty torn. I'm not going to lie. Like, this really is like a coin toss to me. I think the first half will be a very good indicator of, how the pace of the game will go. But at the same time, both these teams, like, they can look completely different in the second halves. Yep. Like, the Thunder are usually strong starters, slow finishers, whereas the Pacers, as we know, opposite. Slow starters, strong finishers. So it's like, it's really a game that you can't just, like, kind of know what the outcome is going to be early. You have to watch the whole way through, or else, you know, you'll never know how it's going to end. But my gut tells me that the Thunder are going to bounce back. I my heart tells me the Pacers could actually go up 3-1, and this might be the Pacers finally their year to win it. But I just feel like the Thunder are going to figure things out. They're going to be pissed off that they've let this kind of get to where they are now. Like, I don't think that they thought that they would ever be, you know, down 2-1 at this point in the series. And the other part of it is, again, like, as great as they've been, like, we've seen it all playoffs long, we've seen it all season long. Halliburton is going to cool off. Siakam is going to cool off. And from game to game, you never know what to expect with them. So I'm just kind of banking on one of them having an off game. And even if it's just one of them, it's enough. If the rest of the team plays almost the exact same, like, do I think Ben Mathurin is going to put up 27 off the bench again?
Probably not.
He might have a 15 point game. Yeah. Like, he could still have a solid game, but 9 for 12 shooting, I would be pretty shocked if he could do that back to back. So I just feel like the Thunder are going to get a little bit better. They're going to play a little harder, and I think the Pacers are going to cool off in comparison to, you know, what they produced in game three. I think we're going to go 2-2 back to OKC.
Yeah, so do I. I think the OKC, 100% agree. They are going to come out with, like, fiery precision here. They like, because we've seen this before from them when they need to turn it on. And again, they haven't been in that many scenarios where they faced adversity this year. The closest one was that Denver series where they had to pull out close wins. And eventually, you know, it gets to game seven and they win it at home. And I think they'll sort of lean on that as a real experience sort of creator for them, as still a very young team. I think SGA is going to come out and just kind of, like, game two, be super just surgical and just come out and score when he needs to score, but get other guys involved. Again, like, that's another thing he needs to focus on. I would say if the Thunder are winning or losing, look at SGA's assist numbers. You know, he's going to have the ball in his hands most of the game, no matter what. He only had 3 assists in game one in a loss, 8 in game two in a win, 4 in game three in a loss. I think that's going to go up again to 8, 9, 10, maybe. He's just going to make a concerted effort to do that. I think OKC is going to pull it out. I don't think it's necessarily going to be a blowout. I think the Pacers genuinely at this point, especially because they're still at home, are just so good that they're not going to get blown out. But I think OKC, they're not a bad team in the clutch either, especially when they're locked in and they feel sort of in control of it. And I think that's just how this series is going to flow. It's going to be very back and forth because it's easy for me to say now that it sort of goes with my Thunder in 7 prediction before this series started. But, you know, not to get too ahead of ourselves, but I think that it's going to go back 2-2. And then I think probably OKC wins game 5 at home. Pacers win game 6 at their home. And then, we go into a game 7, first one in the finals since 2016. I'm hoping, because talk about fucking ratings, that'll be a big boost for those, if we get a final deciding game. But I think OKC comes. I just have a feeling about it, like last night watching that goddamn Oilers game, which was giving me heart palpitations. I just had a feeling that it was going to be a 2-2 series. It wasn't going to be a 3-1. It was going to be even after 4, and I got the same feeling here tonight.
Hey, me and a couple other people I was watching the game with.
They should have lost that motherfucking game too. My God.
100%. Jesus Christ. Yeah, I mean, it was down. They were down 3-1 or 3-0 at the end of the first period, and everybody pretty much turned it off. Yep. Like, fuck it, let's just have a couple beers and chill. And then I was like, kind of following along, like, oh fuck, Oilers just scored 3-1. We're like, hey, whatever, 3-2, 3-3, 4-3. And then they let them get 4. They ended up choking a little bit, but yeah, shout out to Dreisaitl. With the game winner in game 4 there. Yep. Let us know at Big Dog Ball Talk who you guys think is going to win game 4. Is it going to go 7? Let us know at Big Dog Ball Talk, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, roll the heads out there. Help us help you help us. We'll be back after game 4, potentially a Saturday recording. Who knows? Maybe you guys get a treat of back-to-back Big Dog Ball Talk. Maybe it'll be Sunday. We'll see. But be on the lookout for the next episode of Big Dog Ball Talk, and we'll be back soon. Until then, This has been Matt Eckhorn, Jordan Flegel, Big Dog Ball Talk. And as my good friend Jordan always says, you used up your saying already. You didn't talk about yours.
You're right. No, I'll go a different way today. Go Oilers, go, obviously. We're going back game five. That's going to be pivotal. No one ever uses that
pivotal
word.
Game five.
Hit up a happy hour, people. Go to a happy hour. I went to happy hour yesterday. It was a mixture of a patio beer and a happy hour. It's a beautiful thing, Matt. It's just beautiful.
And he said happy hour, not happy ending. Yeah. Let's not get too crazy here.
Before the happy hour, if you want, if you so choose. There's places you can go. I've never been. I know you've checked them out.
Yeah. Follow the Big Go Ball Talk.
That tanning salon, I know what they do.